Tonight we have a Mr. Mac McBrayer speaking tonight. He is a 2010 graduate of the Memphis School of Preaching, right down the street from my favorite barbecue joint. He holds a bachelor's and a master's degree from Ambridge University. His wife's name is Autumn, and they have 6 children. Matt has been serving as a minister for 22 years, and he is the preacher at the Church of Christ at Whispering Hills in Broken Arrow. Matt is a published author and is also a podcaster with the Scattered Abroad Network. Matt?
Well, it's good to be with you this evening. I'm glad to be here. It's kind of an interesting thing whenever you go and you preach at different places. Sometimes you know people. And sometimes you don't. You don't know anybody. And so I am meeting pretty much everybody for the first time. And it is good to meet you. The great thing about being brethren is that when you go somewhere and you are, you know, just a different face, you are still brethren. And so that's a wonderful thing. I've been able to go to other countries. And I can't even speak the language. But you just feel at home because you're still with brethren. And so I'm thankful for that. Just down the road, though, in Oklahoma. So we're not very far from each other. And so I'm thankful to be able to be here with you tonight. If you would, open up your Bibles to Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3. I'm going to meet you there. And we're going to discuss some things. Now, I would say this, that I'm going to, right from the beginning, let you know that I have a translation of the Bible that I use that is not normal for everybody, and that is I use the American Standard. And so people will ask why I use that. I'm going to tell you right up front so that you know, because it is different from probably, I mean, let me ask you, does anybody have an American Standard in here that you're using? Okay, so we got a few. So I use that, and that's pretty surprising. That's pretty cool. But I use that. I have done some extensive work in the original texts, and I'm not a scholar, but I know enough about the original text to know that the American Standard is just so accurate, and that's why I use it. And so if it is clunky at times, because to our English ears, sometimes it is. You'll just have to excuse that for me for the night. And if you don't like it, just don't invite me back. That's okay. You know, that's all right. So, no hard feelings. Look at this. Daniel chapter 3. We're pretty familiar with this passage, aren't we? You know, we're looking at the idea. Let me pull out my phone here. I had the email pulled up and the exact lesson title here. Is how can God help me find my purpose? And we're looking at Daniel chapter 3. Let's look at this together and find out how it is that God works through his people and helps them to guide others and helps them to do great things. I think that when it comes down to doing great things, how many people want to do great things? Yeah, I mean, come on, let's be honest. You want to do great things, so we all want to do great things. And let me just ask you a question. How many in and of us, in and of ourselves, are just great? Well, you know, that's not an easy question, you know, to answer, I know. But listen, the probability is that we're kind of lacking in that department. But this is, I'm going to give you something here, and this is kind of what drives me. And that is that, yeah, I would like to do great things. I would like to be great. But you know what greatness really is? Greatness is just not giving up. I think that's what makes people great. I think that Christians are great. And I think that that's what makes Christians great, is that you just never give up. I met a guy years ago, and he talked to me about religious things, and it was kind of a shocking conversation. And he said, let me just ask you, are you a member of the Church of Christ? And I was like, what in the world? Like, out of the blue. I knew this guy was not a member of the church. And he said, it's just different for you guys. And I was like, okay, well, how so? I want to know like what this person from the outside thinks. And he says, y'all all just roll with the punches. And I was like, okay, all right. Well, I'm good with that. And so what happens to God's people in Daniel chapter 3 is monumental. We all know this very well. But I would like to cover the text and then get into some of this application points here to really describe the things that deal with this topic tonight. Look at this. Just follow along with me. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. And now, I love that this comes right after chapter 2. And remember what happens in chapter 2? There's this dream that you have this image. Now, we don't have time to go into all the details of that, but there's this image. And the image, at the top of this image, is this head, and it is representative of whom? Well, this king and his kingdom here. And so, you know, I think this is kind of what everybody's general thought is that he has this dream, has this idea, this image, and goes, you know, that's a pretty good idea. Let me do something here. And so he makes an image of gold. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent to gather together the satraps, the deputies, and the governors, the judges, the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Then the satraps, the deputies, and the governors, and the judges, and the provinces were gathered together unto the dedication of the image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the herald cried aloud, to you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore at that time, when all the peoples heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, the nations, and the languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Wherefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came near and brought accusations against the Jews. They answered and said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar in his rage and fury commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Now, you've probably heard a lesson like this, and I've taught a lesson like this several times. Matter of fact, I just use the same 3 points here for this. You know, and remember, you probably heard the famous 3 points here. What is it? They wouldn't bow, they wouldn't bend, and they wouldn't burn. Well, here, they're not bowing, right? And so they're not bowing down, and they're not going to worship this golden image. But there's several things that I think we need to point out here. Do you think, and I, you know, we don't know for a fact all of the things that we're going to discuss here, but do you think that these are the only 3 Jews present? I doubt it. I highly doubt it. So, what does that mean for the other Jews? What did they do? Well, they bowed down. But there are certain Jews here. There are some specific Jews that are not doing it, and that they're bringing it before the king, and they say, hey, there are some guys here, some of the guys that you chose, and they are not bowing down to you. They're not doing this. Now, I kind of think back to the entirety of this book, and I think about Daniel and the influence that Daniel could have had on these three young men. All of these men are very smart. That's why they've been chosen. You know, the idea here is probably they're good looking too. You know, people that you want to follow, that's the thing. They've got the full package here. And then, you know, they're brought in. They're going to be assimilated into this society. And they're going to be made rulers of little things here under the king. And then here comes this image. And then they won't bow down. Now, you know, when you think about this, and you think about bowing down, and, you know, they're supposed to worship this golden image. But, you know, could they have just said, well, you know, this isn't really a thing. This isn't really worship. I'm just going to kind of go through the motions here. Well, they're not even going to do that, right? They didn't do that. They're putting their foot down, and they're saying, hey, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. I tend to think that that would be the prominent thought of any of those Jews that were bowing down. No, this is not really a real image. We're just doing this to save our hides. And then you've got three men who go, you know what? No, thank you. No, thank you. We're not going to do this. All right, moving on. So we got this first point here, and then we're going to get into some application here. Don't worry. We're going to get into some application. But they wouldn't bow, and then they wouldn't bend. Let's look at this next few verses here. Verse 14. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said unto them, is it of purpose, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that ye serve not my God, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? You know, is there a reason behind all this, right? Is there something here? I mean, do you have like a bad back or your knees weak or something? I mean, something going on? Is there some logical reason that you're not doing exactly what I have said? Is there something going on here? Now, if ye be ready, that what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast that same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? You know, those are some tough words, aren't they? Yeah, what God's going to do that? Now, when you think about other people's false gods, you know, they have nothing here. You know, that I think back to 1 Samuel, and when they stole the ark, the Philistines stole the ark, they take it into the temple of Dagon. And you remember what happened? Well, Dagon falls over as if the image looks like it's worshiping God, you know. Well, then they set it back up, and then next thing you know, what happens? Well, it falls back over, but this time the head and the hands are cut off. And I love that. I love that image there. You know, listen, I can appreciate, you know, the Cinderella stories, you know, the, you know, coming from nothing and then overcoming. But you know, I do kind of like, at the same time, the very opposite of that, the overwhelming force just decimating everything. And that's God. And so God says, hey, you know what? We're not gonna allow this. We're not gonna allow this ark being in this temple of Dagon. Dagon is dead. Now, when you go back to what is being said here, look, you can bow down. Like, this seems to be somewhat reasonable, right? I mean, I like to think of Nebuchadnezzar as kind of being reasonable here. Hey, is there a reason that you haven't been bowing down? Okay, well, I'll give you another chance. I'm going to give you another chance. That sounds kind of nice, right? Just another chance. You get to go about your business, and we'll act like nothing has ever happened here. And then he says, verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer thee in this matter. I think it's the King James Version that says that we will not be careful in answering. We will not be careful answering. You know what? We don't use the word careful in the right sense today. Being full of care is what that means. And so they're like, hey, we don't care. We are not full of care here. We're not worried about how we're going to answer you. So it doesn't matter. You know what? You've said what God is going to deliver you from this, and then they say, We're not gonna walk on eggshells here. We're not gonna just kind of sugarcoat this. That's not what we're gonna do. We're gonna tell you what's what. So we're gonna tell you here, we have no need to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. I love that. This is one of my favorite sections in the Bible. Matter of fact, whenever I saw that this was an option, I was like, I know which one I want. I wrote an email pretty quick, I think. I was like, that's the one I want. I want Daniel chapter 3. This is one of my favorite things in the Bible. These men are facing what looks like certain death. And they don't go, okay, all right, you've threatened us enough. We're gonna give in now. We're gonna do what you said. They don't do that. Well, they do. Hey, you know what? We don't even have to think about our answer here. We are not gonna bow down. See, here's the point. Our God can save us, but even if he doesn't, guess what we're not gonna do? We're not going to bow down to your stupid image. We're not doing it. Can I say stupid? Is that okay? We're not going to do that. We're not doing it. You look at this, they wouldn't bow and they wouldn't bend. They didn't go, oh, okay, you know, okay, fine, we'll do it. They stood firm. All right. To the most famous part of this passage. Look at this. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed. Okay, so I gotta say this. Probably Nebuchadnezzar has never been spoken to him like that in his life. I have. It was really funny. I'll tell you this story. I like telling stories when I'm preaching. But I used to be a security guard. And that's what I did while I was in school. The school hired me, and so I was able to work security and go to school at the same time. And the law school was not far from the little guard shack where we mostly sat. And every now and then you have to go out and you have to, patrol or answer somebody's call or whatnot. And somebody had called and told me that there was somebody that was parked in a handicapped spot. And, listen, there was another handicapped spot there. Not a big deal. So I just left it alone. Then someone else that was handicapped pulled into the other handicapped spot. I could see it from where I was. And I thought, well, I better go over there. And so I went over there. I was trying to figure out if I knew what car it was. I didn't know. I'd never seen it before. So I did the logical next step. That is, I wrote it a ticket. It's like $15. It's not much, It's not a big deal. I wrote him a ticket. And then Mr. Jaguar drove up to where I was. And he shook that ticket in my face. And he said, do you know who I am? And I said, no, sir. And he said, I am the dean of the law school. And I said, oh, well, I maybe had less of a filter back then. And I kind of maybe went a little too far. I don't know. You can decide on your own. And I said, oh, well, then you probably will understand this principle very well. there's actually kind of a law about not parking in these spots, and there are fines for it. I gave you the lesser of the fine. You know, you can get up in the state of Alabama up to $500 fine for parking in a handicapped spot. You got a $15 ticket. And he goes, you should just know who I am. He kept repeating that statement. And he said, well, what are you going to do about this? And I said, oh, well, do you know who I am? And he goes, I have no idea who you are. And I said, well, have a nice day. I got to talking to about that one, but he deserved it, right? He deserved it. He had probably never been talked to like that. Nebuchadnezzar probably never been talked to like this. Never. These men of God have stood up to him, and he is furious. He is so angry. So, his visage has changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore, he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded certain mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their hosen, their tunics, and their mantles, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished and rose up in haste, and he spake and said unto his counselors, did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the aspect of the 4th is like a son of the gods. In most of your translations, it's going to say the son of God. The American Standard has this right. It is like the son of the gods. Doesn't know, Nebuchadnezzar doesn't know who Jesus is. He's not saying this is Jesus. What is happening here is they see somebody there, and he doesn't know what it's like. But this second, you know, this fourth person that is unaccounted for looks different. And there's something about him. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace. He spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth out of the midst of the fire. And the satraps and deputies and the governors and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men that the fire had no power upon their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed, neither were their hosen changed, nor had the smell of fire passed on them. Now, I got to tell you, I have been around a lot of fire. I like going camping. When you go camping, you go out and you're going to make a fire and you're going to smell like smoke. You know, because that's just how it is. When you're near that, you're going to... These guys were in the middle of all of this. Don't even smell like smoke. Don't smell like they've been around fire at all. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and have yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their house shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that is able to deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. You know, this is kind of a common theme throughout the Bible. You know, your God cannot do anything. And then what does he do? Above and beyond anything that could be thought about, you know. Hold on. Is this 1 Kings 17 or 2 Kings 17? I think it's 2 Kings. Hezekiah? Anyway. You know what is said? Sennacherib comes and he says to Hezekiah, your God can't save you. And then the very next day, you know, the American Standard says, 185,000 people woke up dead. I don't know how that happens, but yeah. They're dead. 185,000. They said, your God is completely impotent against us. He cannot do a thing. Your God is not going to save you. You know, as soon as somebody says that, it's over. It's over for them. God is going to do something, right? And so that's what happens here in the scriptures. So you see this, they wouldn't bow, and they wouldn't bend, and they wouldn't burn. Now, after we've discussed all of that for the next 20 minutes or so, I think, right? For the next 20 minutes or so, as long as that clock is right, then we're going to discuss some of the things concerning the idea of how God helps his people discover and fulfill their purpose by looking right back at this passage. Look at verses 16 through 18 with me. Verses 16 through 18. You know, God helps you find your purpose through conviction. Man, you got to be convicted. You know, sometimes, you know, I like to ask this question to people. And I'll say, hey, if you were taken into a court of law and they were going to try to convict you as a Christian, would they be able to succeed? I hope for everybody in this room, people would be saying, absolutely, absolutely. I was preaching one of the first works I had when I started preaching. I know I don't look like I've been preaching for 23 years now, but I have. One of my first works, I was talking to a guy, and I'd been preaching there for several months. And then next thing I know, he's telling me something that I have not forgotten. I hope I never forget it. But it was an immense confession. He came up to me and he said, you know, I'd been doing a series on evangelism. And he said, I got up the courage. I got up the courage. I finally talked to a coworker friend of mine. I've been working with him for, I think he said, like 17 years or something like that. A long time. And so he said, I finally got the courage. I wanted to talk to him about the Bible. And so he started talking about the Bible. I invited him to church. And he said, and this is how it went. I said, would you like to come to church with me? He said, so, well, where do you go? And he said, well, I go to the Magby Gap Church of Christ in Trenton, Georgia. And he goes, you're a member of the Church of Christ? I am too. Yeah, I hear that. I don't know who did that. But that's exactly why he told me the story. He said, I was so ashamed for both of us. He said, we've been working together for a long time. We've said things that were not Christ-like. We've done things that were not Christ-like. Neither one of us knew. And he said, and I vow to not do that ever again. We need to be convicted, brethren. We need to be convicted for our Lord. What does that look like? We should love our Lord above anything else. If you go over to Matthew chapter 10 and look there, you know, Jesus said himself, I didn't come to bring peace but a sword. What does that mean? Does that mean that we're going to go and be violent? No, that's not what that means. But people's houses are going to be divided because of the word of God, because we're trying to follow Jesus. And so people will lose their parents. Have you ever known anybody lose their parents because they were trying to serve God? They were going to lose their father, their mothers, their brothers and sisters. Now, the good thing is that guess what you gain when you become a Christian? You gain fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters and lands and all these things. It's great being a Christian, but we need to stay convicted. We need to make sure that we are doing what is right, that no matter what is going to come our way, that we love God more than anything else. I know how deep of a thought this is. You know, when my bio was read, you heard that I am married and I have 6 kids. And man, I love those kids. And you know, if the government tried to come in and take my kids, well, that's my last day on earth, okay? But I'm telling you right now, we've got to love God more than anything in this world. More than anything. You, and I hope that you did, I hope you married a spouse that loves God just as much as you do, and that means that they love God more than they love you. That's what we need. We need people that love God above all else. And we need parents to teach their children to love God above all else. You know, if you teach your children to love God, you know, everything else kind of falls in place. That's what I found. If you teach your kids to love God, you know, you don't have to harp and harp on the don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal. You don't have to do that so much, because guess what you're doing? You're teaching them to love God. Why don't you do these things? Because, you know, I love God. Now, as they're younger, yeah, they're going to do some bad stuff. You're going to have to get on to them. You're going to have to spank them. You're going to have to be creative in some of these punishments. I get it. But you're trying to make them learn conviction for the Lord. Love God above all things. All right, let's look at this number 2 here. You know, God will reveal His purpose sometimes through a test. You know, you got to be convicted first, and then you're going to have a test. And then you just got to put your trust in God here. You know, this comes here from verses 19 through 23. You know, they are going to be thrown into this furnace. It is the end. That's all. You know, if you're just looking at this through with human eyes, this is it. This is the end. But not with God. So they didn't worry, remember, you know, before with the whole they didn't bend, you know what they say? Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you do. We're still going to follow God. And so that's exactly what they did. They followed through. And so God will reveal His purpose through testing sometimes. And so, you know, when you think of the things that you're going through, I like to think about Romans 8, verse 28. All things work together for good, those who love the Lord, those who are called according to His purpose, right? So all things are going to work together for good. Let me ask you a question. Does that mean all things are good? Everything that happens to you is good. You know, that is what the denominational world teaches. You know what? If all things aren't happening good to you, then maybe you're not serving God. That sounds exactly like what they were doing to Job, his friends were doing. Oh, you've probably sinned, Job. You know, that was the message that was going throughout. You've sinned. You've done wrong. Why else would God allow all this? You think about it. God was suffering, watching Job suffer. But He was allowing it to show Satan that He did not have a hold on Job, and therefore cannot get a foothold on God. We have to think that when trials come, that's what's going to make us better. If you look at James chapter 1, what do we see when it comes to trials? You know, we need to let those things have their perfect work, that we may be perfect and entire, lacking nothing. That is, that we've increased in patience. You know, how many people have ever been through, raise your hand, okay, I'm asking for a little participation here. Raise your hand if you've ever been through such a stressful time that you didn't know what you were going to do. Raise your hand if you've been through stress like that. Okay, all right. You raised your hand, so you made it through, so that's good. Good for you, right? But did you do that once? And then another thing happened and you thought, I don't know how I'm going to make it through this. How many other people have had it happen more than once, right? Yeah. Was it easier the second time to deal with things than it was the first? Maybe it is you had something bad happen to you. Let me give you an example of how this is, you know, how rough this can be. You know, this is just a little thing, okay? This is just money. We shouldn't be too concerned with money, okay? But this was money. But I don't have a lot of it, I'll be honest. I'm taken care of, but when you got 8 mouths to feed in your family, you know, you might look at what I make and what I report on my taxes and you go, man, that guy makes a lot. But when you can consider all the mouths I got to feed, you go, maybe it's not that much money, you know. I am just a preacher, guys. But, you know, when we had moved to West Virginia, we had some things happen. I'm not going to go on the whole story. But we ended up purchasing a house so that someone else could live in the preacher's home. And so we went ahead and we purchased the house and we were working on it. And there's this guy and he had been a drug addict. But he was clean and sober, trying to do the right thing, trying to make a business for himself. And I said, hey, you know what? I got a second chance in life. I used to be dead in sin. Now I'm a Christian. I like second chances. I'm going to give this guy a second chance. So I paid him to do some work I could have done, but I paid him to do it. And he was doing some electrical work, gave me a great price. And, you know, he didn't do his job. And I finally had to call him and go, hey, listen, y'all have been over here for 2 weeks, and I know what I'm doing around the house, and I could have done all that you've done in one day. So I'm thinking that maybe you don't know what you're doing. And so, you know, that's okay. But we're going to stop this work. I've given you half the money. You just need to go with half the money, okay? Because he tried to harass me and do all kinds of things. Of course, he knew where I lived. And I had to get the police involved because of threatening and whatnot. A little stressful, you know. Fast forward to when I was trying to move here, actually. I hired another guy to come and help me do some work. Anybody want to know what the end of this story was? Yeah, much the same. But, you know, I was a whole lot more put out the first time than I was the second time. Why? Well, not that you really get used to something like that, but you kind of train yourself. You get over the stress a little bit. That's how we grow as human beings. We got to grow. And so when we go through things, it helps us grow. It also helps us to help other people. And so, you know, whenever, you know, the whole, you know, Romans 8:28 thing, you know, if, you know, all things working together for good. You know, when you go through something bad, you know, maybe you've lost a spouse. I don't know. I don't want to know how that feels. But I know several people know how that feels. When you've done that, can you help somebody else who loses a spouse? When you lose a parent, you lose a child, go through all kinds of things. You can help other people. See, all things work together for good. Maybe you go through some pain and suffering to help alleviate someone else's pain and suffering a little bit. That's a good thing. All right. I want to make mention of this. If you look at verse 25, I want to make some application here. Verse 25, you know, it says, look, I see four people there. Well, didn't we throw in three? I see four. One looks like a son of the gods. You know, I want to make this point here that God will help us in our distress. He meets us there. And he takes care of us. Go back thinking about some of those things maybe you were thinking about earlier. When you've been through something that was exceptionally difficult. And you go, I don't know how I'm going to make it. And you think about that often. You go, I just don't know. I don't know how I'm going to live another day. I don't know how I'm going to go on because of all this trouble. It's got to end. It's got to end. Something's got to give. But then somehow God comes in and takes care of it. I don't know how that happens all the time. Sometimes we do, you know. But there's a lot of providential things that happen. You know, since I don't preach here and I get to tell all the stories I love telling, I'm going to tell you one. Years ago, we bought a minivan. You know, we went to that level, you know. I hated it because I had a Dodge Ram V8 Magnum that I had to sell for the minivan. But, you know, that stunk. But anyway, we got this minivan. It was a nice van. It was. We were trying to be very responsible. We were living in Missouri at the time. And we were trying to be responsible. We put a lot of money down so that we'd have very little on the payment. And then I did not realize this. Some states that where I grew up, we did not do this. I knew that we did not pay sales tax on vehicles. And so what they do where I grew up is they wrap that into your loan. Now, what happened to me is I had to pay that at the DMV, and I had no idea. Well, we bought a pretty decent vehicle, but the tax that they were going to charge at the time was $500. And I put all that money into, I didn't have $500. I thought I was doing the right thing by putting the money into the vehicle, into the loan, you know, and anyway. So then I go back home to my wife. I go, I don't know how I'm going to tag this thing because they want $500 to just get this tag going. And my wife said, well, what are we going to do? I said, I guess it's going to sit here parked until we figure something out. And so anyway, I went to the mailbox and I pulled out the mail and I had a check from like Aaron's Rent-A-Center, you know. I've never been to Aaron's Rent-A-Center, okay? I've never done that. It's quite a scam. Don't ever do anything like that. You end up paying like 300% of whatever you're buying. Just go, you know, it'd be better to get a credit card than it would be to do that. But anyway, I ended up calling them up and going, I've got a check for $500. And they're like, yeah, yeah, we see that right here. And I was like, I've not done business with you guys. And they're like, it says we owe you $500. And I was like, how in the world? Are you sure? And they're like, yeah, it says we owe you $500. I said, I literally have no idea why I'm getting this. And he's like, maybe your identity's been stolen. No, I keep up with that pretty well. Nobody wants to steal my identity, you know. Nobody's wanted that credit score. And so anyway, I said, I don't know what to do with this thing. And they said, you know what you do? You turn that check over, and you sign the back, and you go deposit it. And I was like, well, I can do that. They told me to do it. So I did, and I went and paid for that. I have no idea. I still can't, for the life of me, I can't figure that out. All I think is, you know what? God took care of me. I don't know what else to say. I have no idea what in the world, you know, but I was taken care of. God takes care of us even when we don't understand what's going on. All right, we are almost out of time. Let me give you a couple of other things, and we'll have to do this rapid fire here. God uses your faith to influence others. You know, look at what happens at the end of this in Daniel 3, verses 28 and 29. What does Nebuchadnezzar do? He believes. This God is not, maybe he doesn't believe everything. I get that. He kind of is like the Romans and kind of encompasses everything. But he believes that this God is the best one. So our faith can influence other people. And then finally, God honors faithfulness. God honors faithfulness. Now, I would like to point out that what happens here, going back to what they say before they're thrown into the fiery furnace, and that was what? hey, we're not going to be careful in answering you. We know that our God can save us. But if he doesn't, I think that's an important point. See, they were leaving room for God to do whatever he wanted. You know, maybe it is that God wanted them to do this, and then they were going to die, and it would serve a purpose for God. That could have been it. They said, God can save us, but even if he doesn't, we are not bowing down. We're not going to do it. And so God honors faithfulness. At the very least, it may not be in this lifetime, but God will honor faithfulness at the end of time. Thank you for your kind attention. I appreciate it, and I'm thankful that I was able to come and be with you. I don't know if you need to say anything, but we are dismissed at this point.